Here's some more Inside Wealth, the show that truly enriches your life, right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. We're here with Mike Hannigan, the co-founder of Give Something Back Business Products. It's a B2B company, kind of like a Staples or an Office Max, where they sell office products to other companies. And they have a very interesting model of giving so much of their profitability to community projects, to other nonprofit organizations, and really just being incredible stewards in the community. And, you know, Mike, you shared a little bit about the business model. How much money thus far have you given back to nonprofit organizations and other stakeholders?
Just recently, we came very close to passing the $4 million range. So we just finished our annual donation meeting. Every year we have a donation meeting where we hand out the checks to the nonprofits that were selected that year. And so this year's donations of $434,000 brought the total to almost $4 million, which represents about 78 to 80% of all the profits we've made since we started.
Wow. So do you have a specific percentage formula of how many dollars of profit are allocated for nonprofit activity? Or
No, the formula is the profits are ultimately going to be allocated to the donations. But each year we have to do business planning based on what we forecast our growth to be and what our banking relationships are. So we have to make sure that we have enough liquidity and cash on hand in the bank to make sure that we can achieve our goals without having to go borrow money that we don't want to do for next year. So and it's a moving target. You know, there are years when we've given away twice the annual profits that we made that year. There are years when we've given away 25%. So it's a guess, but over the last 17 years, we've accumulated enough of a net worth to be able to sustain us, I think, through any kind of difficult times that are ahead. And, you know, frankly, we're forecasting some difficult times ahead over the next year.
I was going to ask you what your thoughts are of the economy based upon your business and the conversations that you have and what you see with your business customers.
Well, our business customers are cutting back. I mean, the smart ones are. And there are business customers that will no longer be customers because they will no longer be businesses because they'll go out of business. And hopefully if that happens, they won't go out of business owing us money. But in a difficult, our customers are vulnerable to the swings of the economy. And although we're not the market leader, we're the largest independent office supply company in California, but the market leader, Staples and Office Depot, are more vulnerable to losing customers because they're more directly related to the economy. So we're more likely with an aggressive campaign to pick up customers who are looking for price savings that they would otherwise not be all that, you know, motivated to get in years past. So we think we'll do fine. We grew last year about 8%. We're growing this year maybe 5%. But, you know, the big competitors are shrinking. I mean, they're losing not market share, but they're losing revenues because customers are cutting back. And it's the smart thing to do for a business is to look for ways to get through what look like some rough waters ahead.
Any idea how rough the waters may be, or it's too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell, but, you know, I'm worried. I mean, you were talking about the Bear Stearns thing. I mean, I think nobody knows. I mean, and some unprecedented government actions have been taken, first time in almost 100 years, really, and because they're worried about how difficult this economy is going to be because there's so much unknown. There's so many factors that will affect the profitability of companies that is essentially unknown.
Well, let's go from the unknown to the known for a moment here and get back to give something back and your business model. You mentioned that it's your customers who have direct input into the allocation of where some of your profits go to their charities of choice. Is that correct?
Yes, essentially. I mean, our goal is to take the profits out of the marketplace because, you know, essentially we talk about the difficult economy, but this is a rich, wealthy nation. I mean, it's the richest, most powerful nation in the history of the world. Yet most people are appalled by the fact that, you know, our public education system, our public health systems, I mean, they're literally having difficult times in the midst of this abundance. Now, so for us, the issue is not the availability of wealth or the creation of wealth, but it's the distribution of wealth in a ways that not just me, but, you know, most people, the rich and poor alike, see as really ineffectively dealing with, you know, many of the problems that many of us confront. So our goal is to go into the marketplace where wealth is created and distributed, capture our fair share of that wealth and then distribute it according to the decisions that are made by the people who live and work in the communities that face the kind of problems that need to be solved. So if we were to poll your listeners, your thousands of listeners, you'd have thousands of different ideas about what the important issues and problems in the communities are. So our goal is to take that wealth and distribute it in a way that's consistent with that diversity of the community, so that, you know, you have your issues in terms of what you think is important in your community. I have mine. You know, everybody has theirs, and there's no reason for us to decide one or the other. So we poll our customers, we poll our employees, we send a ballot out to each location that we have a sales office into, and we ask our customers to tell us the organizations, the nonprofit organizations that are doing the best work in your communities, and vote. Each customer gets a ballot. Each customer gets 10 votes. The votes come in. If 10% of the votes go to the Women's Cancer Resource Center, then they get 10% of the profits that are associated with that ballot. So the profits are created in the marketplace that are distributed into the community according to the decisions that are made by the people who should be in a position to judge what's working and what's not working in those communities.
We're here with Mike Hannigan, co-founder of Give Something Back Business Products Company. And it's remarkable how they've given away over $4 million so far in their history to nonprofit activities. Do you find that your customers or clients, that you gain clients because of your business model and your sense of community involvement and altruism?
I think it's a mixed bag. And any salesperson for Give Something Back, and we probably have 35 or 38 outside salespeople now, find it a very difficult issue to broach with a business customer. So put yourself in the shoes of an office manager or a purchasing agent at a major corporation, and for them to go tell their boss, oh, we just switched our office supply contract from Staples to this company called Give Something Back. Well, you know, that Give Something Back doesn't scream out low prices, great service, quality products. It says something else. But what it needs to say to the customer, what the customer needs to hear, is that it's good for our business. It contributes to our business's bottom line. The other stuff, the Give Something Back aspect, has got to be seen as not a trade-off. So we're not asking customers to make any sacrifices at all. And that's where the idea came from. And I was a consumer of Newman's Own spaghetti sauce. You know, back in 1990, I was a single guy, and, you know, single guys eat spaghetti sauce for dinner most of the time.
Hopefully with spaghetti.
Yeah.
On a good
with
day.
With spaghetti. So, and, you know, and you're shopping around, and there's Newman's Own up there, and it costs the same as the other brands. It's got kind of a healthy feel to it. And so as a consumer, it's a perfectly valid choice. Plus, if you're interested in the fact that the profits are donated to charities rather than going to the Franco-American stockholder, that's an additional competitive advantage. So that model, good for the customer, good for the community, good for the company, is the model that makes sense in our business place. As long as we can compete, then we can create wealth and then have that wealth go out into the community. So, but we have to cross that threshold with the business customer, because remember, it's not their money they're spending. They're responsible for making a good financial decision for their companies. If we can't provide them that good financial decision, then we don't deserve their business. But if we do, then we should make a profit. And, you know, frankly, every company gives its profits away, ultimately. I mean, you know, Staples doesn't put its profits under a mattress somewhere. Eventually, that profit is going to be given away to the owners of the company, either through dividends or appreciation of stock value. So the question is, who are the beneficiaries of the success? For us, we've just substituted the principal stakeholder of investors and stockholders with the principal stakeholder of the community served by nonprofit organizations, chosen by the people who live and work in those communities. And it's a model that really does work in the marketplace.
And the point you're underscoring here is that there is still plenty of retained earnings, if you want to call it that, or funding internal to the company, so you can continue to grow.
Sure. And, you know, we're not giving the payroll away. We're giving the profit away. So our employees, our mortgage payment, all the cost factors that we need to be aware of in our business are the same cost factors that our competitors need to be aware of. And those cost factors are determined by the market. So we can't pay our workers more. We can't pay our workers less. Otherwise, our workers will either go away or we'll be overpaying them. And then the cost differential will be exploited by our competitors by having lower prices. So the marketplace really puts us in a fairly narrow band in terms of what we can offer and how we operate as a business. If we can do that, and my business partner and I, Sean Marks, we came out of a business environment, so we understood what it took to compete in a very competitive the copy machine marketplace, which is a very similar marketplace.
So how do you compete effectively when you're dancing with giants here?
Well, we have a virtually stockless business model, like most of the high-growth office supply companies in America. We've moved more to a logistical model that allows us to deliver merchandise anywhere in the country next day for less than it costs if we warehouse the merchandise ourselves. So we probably pay a point or two more for the merchandise, but we save a point or two less on the distribution and the overhead that we have in comparison to companies like Staples, Office Depot, Office Max. So, but the proof is in the pudding. I mean, many of our contracts are blind contracts. We've been the paper vendors for the city and county of San Francisco for 9 years, and all those contracts are won on closed bids. So how we achieve that cost parity with the multinational corporations, you know, it's a complicated business question. But the fact of the matter is observable just in the way we've grown over the past 17 years.
Is a fair amount of your business also with municipalities or other institutions that would be more readily interested in the give something back business model? Or it's just, once again, even for them, it's all, you know, the numbers first?
It's got to be numbers first. I mean, if the city and county were spending more money on its pens and paper, they'd have less to spend on health care and, you know, police. So, it's the responsibility of the buyer to make a good decision for the entity they work for. So, and we understand that. And frankly, this business model would not survive, would not be sustainable if we didn't operate in that room. Somebody's making money selling this stuff. All we've done is we've just changed the beneficiary. We haven't changed how we make the profit. There are some things we do differently because we have a stakeholder that is a community stakeholder. So, for example, we have a large solar array that produces the electricity we use as a business on our roof, and all of our employees have their health care paid for. I think even Staples cut back their employees' health care last year, even though they made $1.6 billion. Now, you know, they didn't do it because, you know, they hate their employees. They did it because their goal, as most public corporations' goal, is to enhance shareholder value. So we probably overpay in terms of the marketplace for certain things, but as long as we're profitable, we would consider those expenses more kind of human rights that would be very, very difficult for us to change our strategy along those lines. So when you consider the community and your employees and the environment, legitimate stakeholders in the way you run your business, some of the decisions are different, but most of the fundamental business decisions are still the same.
So why don't you give us an example of some of the organizations and groups that you have donated to based upon popular vote here in recent history here?
Well, historically, food banks are always big vote getters because they serve the truly needy. Public health organizations have been getting a lot of votes in the last few years. Domestic violence organizations receive a lot of votes. Animal rights organizations get an unbelievable number of votes. Less so now than maybe 5 years ago when there was less of an urgency to the quality of life of, you know, human beings. But, you know, for several years, the SPCA was the top vote-getting organization in our balloting process, reflecting, you know, the popular, you know, view that animals needed, you know, assistance and help. There are 1.2 billion nonprofit organizations, nonprofit organizations in the United States of America. In the Bay Area, within 100 miles of us right here, there's 25,000 of them. So how do you choose? I mean, they're doing everything from, you know, taking blind skiers up to the mountains for recreational. There's any number of themes that people organize nonprofits organizations. So it's impossible for us in running a business to be in any reasonable position to judge who's doing work better than others. So our goal is to put it out there to the people who should be in a position to know, who validate the success of these organizations by their votes.
Well, I've got one final question for you, Mike, and our time together has been going all too quickly. What is your vision for what our world could possibly be?
Well, you know, I'm extremely optimistic. 17 years ago when we started this company, we were kind of a fringe company. People really didn't kind of get the idea that a company could be organized in a competitive in marketplace and still have a central, socially responsible core organizing principle. But it's kind of becoming mainstream now. There are national organizations that have hundreds of companies like ours that are out there organized in the marketplace on behalf of stakeholders other than investors and stockholders, for the environment, There is even there's even a foundation now. The Google Foundation is the first for-profit foundation. I mean, that's a foundation who's going to invest in money in companies like ours who are out there competing in the marketplace on behalf of some socially responsible goal. So you can't go to a graduate program in business and not be inundated with students saying, don't just teach me marketing and finance, teach me something about corporate social responsibility. So there is a whole movement now over the past 17 years that is really gaining steam to be able to use business as a tool to accomplish goals that most citizens of the United States would recognize as being legitimate, valid goals.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for being a shining example and a pioneer to show how the rubber can hit the road. And there's plenty of rubber for everybody.
Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure being here.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW 910 AM San Francisco.